96.1 and 1270.
On the arm of Colin Kaepernick with a chance to take the lead. Kaepernick, end zone, Crabtree, broken up, picked off! This game is over! Knocked in the air, intercepted by Smith. Off the hands of Richard Sherman.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me!
Who was talking about you?
Oh, what a day yesterday. Welcome to CBS Sports Radio, 1270 AM, 96.1 FM here in Reno, worldwide at renosportsradio.com. My name is Notch, and for Mike, who right now, at least hopefully, is on an airplane somewhere, practicing saying the words, "Where's the American Embassy?" in Swahili. At least for his sake, that's what I'm hoping he's doing. Be with you for the next hour. 775-823-1920 is the phone number. Big sports day yesterday, of course, a couple of hockey games on NBC and NBC Sports Network. That's right, rematch of the Stanley Cup Finals from last year, Bruins and Blackhawks. But there was football, too. Don't worry, there was football. People losing their mind the entire day yesterday, as you heard Richard Sherman, little sampler there. I've got some other audio. Richard Sherman, people are talking about how emotional he was, that he's not a thug, that he was just, it was the heat of the moment. But that's not really the case. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We have the Smoker Bowl, finally. People firing up in celebration in Denver and Seattle. Pot legal in both places. It's a coincidence, though. People are acting like they're better football teams because of that. But no, it's not that. It is going to be a talking point, however, in the next couple weeks. A lot of interesting talking points for the Super Bowl. And I'll be mentioning those here in a little bit later on this hour. The more exciting of the two games, obviously, yesterday was the NFC Championship game, which was the second game. I was doing laundry during the second half of the AFC Championship game. That's how riveting the Patriots and the Broncos was. But if you bet the Seahawks, they covered. Obviously, they won by 6, 23-17. Most sportsbooks had them at minus 3. I know Harris had them at 3.5, but they threw you a carrot. If you took the 3.5, they gave it to you at even money. So if you made money on the Seahawks yesterday, congratulations. The over-under total points was 40. 23-17 final. Whether you made money on the over-under or not really depends on where you place the wager and when you place the wager. Because all weekend long, I was checking out the spreads, and I noticed that it went anywhere from 39.5 at some point to 40, and then 40.5. I like the over, actually. My first instinct, I didn't touch the over-under with a 10-foot pole. I had the Niners on the money line yesterday. But I like the over at 39.5. I probably would have liked the over at 40.5. So as you can tell, one of those would have won and one of those would have lost. If you made money in the over-under, by the way, you're very lucky. You got to tell me your secret. Niners and Seahawks, two best teams in the NFC. I've got good news and I've got bad news for fans of both those teams. The good news is, unlike what Brandon Tierney said about a couple of minutes ago on CBS Sports Radio, the mothership, he said that the window of opportunity for the Niners may not be as big as he thought. He's right to an extent. But I think they're well-coached teams. They're deep teams. The good news is you may have the new Manning Brady with Kaepernick and Wilson. The bad news is, though, like he mentioned about the free agents, there's going to be some free agents that are going to have to leave both these teams because Cap, Wilson are both on their rookie contracts. And if you look to the starting 22 for each team yesterday, you got to wave goodbye to at least three of the starting 22 for each team just to pay for the quarterbacks. Because Russell Wilson's making, what, like $350,000 this year? He's going to get a raise pretty soon. Kaepernick also going to be getting a raise. And you hope they would be consistent at some point as they get older. I mean, they're only a couple of years in. And very schizophrenic. Both quarterbacks are very schizophrenic yesterday. We really had two different games yesterday in Seattle. Like I said, I had the Niners on the money line. And I was looking good for a while because I had the Broncos minus 5 on the other half of my two-game parlay. So I was looking pretty good for a little while. The Niners controlled the first half. They didn't pass the ball that much. Kaepernick only had about 17 yards passing in the first half, but he was breaking off some runs, which is what he does. They needed to establish the ground game. They did with Kaepernick. They didn't with Frank Gore so much. But they looked pretty good against the Seahawks for a while. They kept their composure for a while. They didn't trail until the fourth quarter. It's about 14 minutes left to go. They jumped offside. Russell Wilson threw that touchdown pass to Kearse. 35-yarder gave the Seahawks the 2017 lead. But that was then. The first half, though, they looked really good. Kaepernick played like the superstar that he is. He's a superstar because he exudes the kind of confidence. He exudes maturity. He doesn't shrink in big game pressure. He was like that in college, too, with Nevada. Remember the Boise State game at Mackey Stadium? He's a big game player. He's always been a big game player. Super Bowl last year, they got blown out in the first half. He didn't shrink, though. He came back. Like I said, he only 17 yards passing in the first half. But you don't want to try to beat Seattle with your arm because that's the kind of defense they have. They feed off making plays with their secondary and with their pass rush. So the first half was looking pretty good for the Niners. The Seattle's a house of horrors, though, for Kaepernick. The passing game in the second half, when you were trying to force the ball in, it turned into a nightmare. He had a few good throws. He had one great throw that passed to Bolden for the touchdown, the third that broke the tie. That jump pass, it wasn't really a jump pass, like a traditional Brett Favre jump pass. He just kind of leapt in. I mean, it was just nice. You got to see the highlight of it if you haven't seen it. You got to look at it a few times. He's very athletic, which actually is part of Kaepernick's problem because he has the poise, he has the magnetism, he has the maturity, but he's also one of those mobile athletic quarterbacks that you have to worry about because in the NFL, unless you improve your passing game, you have a short shelf life because the mobile athletic quarterback is like a supermodel. You know, the supermodel, once the looks are gone, what do you have? Athletic quarterbacks are the same way. Look at RG3, for example. I mean, dynamic 2 years ago when the Redskins won the division, but then the knee injury, and then this year he tried to be more of a conventional type quarterback. And the Redskins, well, they would be picking second in the draft, but they traded their first-round pick to get RG3, so the Rams be picking second in the draft thanks to the Redskins. The problem is once the ability to run isn't there anymore, you have to have the pocket passing ability to stay in the league. And I hope that doesn't happen with Kaepernick where he phases out too prematurely. It's one thing to have the ability to run, to stay in the pocket, to move around, to avoid the pressure, to set up the pass. It's another thing, though, to rely on your legs, having to run. A lot of mobile quarterbacks, I know, they do one read, and then they're out of the pocket. I mean, if it's a design draw play, that's one thing. But you have to go through your progressions, and then you have escape as a last resort. And it's weird because Cam Newton's the exact same way. It's funny because the Niners were beating up Cam Newton two weekends ago. And Troy Aikman was talking on Fox about how the Panthers coaching staff didn't like all the hits that Cam Newton was taking, which is kind of peculiar because that's half their playbook. You can't design a playbook around your quarterback getting hit and expect success because you spend millions of dollars on offensive linemen and these coaches have thousands of hours they think of these blocking schemes to keep the quarterback from getting hit. You look at the veteran quarterbacks that are around a long time. They don't get hit that often. And I'm worried about Kaepernick because he can run. He's exciting. You love his game, but he is the one hit away. You always have to worry about that, especially in the long run today. You know, you get a guy diving at your legs, and it's just something to have to worry about. Kaep ran for 130 yesterday. He had the big run that set up the one touchdown. 14 of 24 passing, 153. He had three turnovers. Not all his fault, though. You got to remember something about turnovers. You're going to look at Kaepernick, you're going to look at the turnovers. That's what a lot of people are going to focus on today. But you have to remember something. You're always playing against a team that's getting paid to beat you. And not every turnover, not every error is an unforced error. Not every turnover is a mistake by the person turning the ball over. Seattle made some really good plays on defense. Kaep really only had one turnover that was his fault, the throw on the left sideline. He was throwing to Bolden. Cam Chancellor picked it off. That was a terrible throw. Vernon Davis was alone up the seam. Kaep missed him. Probably one of those things where he's not going through his progressions. There was a quick timing route or something. I hate those quick timing routes on the sideline. Those are pick sixes waiting to happen. They should outlaw those from the league, especially for young quarterbacks. The other two, though, Kaepernick, he was leaving the pocket. He's more effective outside the pocket on bootlegs, which they should do more often. They tried running quarterback draw plays up the middle with Kaep. A couple times they squandered third down conversions. because the draw play didn't work. The interior run defense of the Seahawks was too tough. But they got him outside the pocket, but the pass rush, they had a strip sack, the one turnover, and then, of course, the sound clip I played at the beginning, the Richard Sherman play. It was a good throw. It was the corner of the end zone. It was one of those things where just a couple of inches. He didn't underthrow the ball. He properly threw the ball. He might have put a little bit more air under it. I mean, I'm picking nits right now about Kaepernick's game. He does have a thing where he needs to work on his touch with his passing, but it was a good throw. I don't have a problem with the throw. I don't have a problem with the decision to make the throw to go for the end zone, even though he had a couple of timeouts. But it was a great play by Richard Sherman to make that play. You can't blame Kaepernick for that play. You can't blame Crabtree for that play. Sherman just made a great play, so you have to tip your cap to him. Cap, though, at the end of the game, the press conference, he's a stand-up kid. Like I said, he's got great maturity. You love that about a guy. He's not a finger pointer. He took responsibility for the loss, which, I mean, he's the quarterback. He's going to get that GOAT label with some people. I don't think he deserves it, though, because he really is a star, a budding superstar. He's still young. He's already been to at least the conference championship game twice already in what this is his third year. He's got to improve in the passing game, though. The real problem with the 49ers offense was the interior run game. They couldn't get Frank Gore going at all. 14 yards on 11 carries. And for a guy like Frank Gore, you need Frank Gore to have at least a decent game if you're going to beat Seattle in Seattle. You can't rely on the passing game against that defense. You need to establish the run. It showed up, I think, in the second half more than it did the first half. The key, I think, on the 49ers first drive was on the 49ers first drive, though, when they got the turnover, Aldon Smith stripping Russell Wilson. They had the ball at the 15. It was one of those third down draw plays that I talked about with Kaepernick just running straight up the middle. They needed to get a touchdown on that first drive. They came up with a field goal. They settled for a field goal. You hate the word settling in a situation like that, because if you're going to get gift wrap points in the first 5 minutes of the game, you've got to get the most points possible. They really needed a touchdown there. I kind of winced a little bit when they only kicked a field goal, because that's one of those situations where, especially for your own confidence, you need to get a touchdown. So it was kind of tough to see them settle for the field goal there. Russell Wilson looked like he had some butterflies. He looked skittish in the first half. He did, however, he was the opposite of Kaepernick. He used his legs to set up the pass. He had that big scramble. And then the pass to Baldwin, the deep pass that set up their only points in the first half, which was a field goal. The 49ers defense dominant in the first half. Mr. and Mr. Smith, Alden, Justin did great. Pass coverage. Dante Whitner's got to stop launching himself at people, though. I mean, that penalty, I don't understand why he can't just hit people regularly. It's like with the Carlos Rogers shove that got the penalty on the fourth down play at the end of the half. It's fake toughness. You have to be tough but smart. And fake toughness is dumb toughness. And at the time when the Carlos Rogers thing happened and the 49ers had the ball, they would have had the ball at the 38, their own 38. It moved back to the 23 because of the penalty. And it was a terrible call, by the way. There were a bunch of terrible calls against the Niners, but you can't point to that. That was a terrible call. At the time, though, I thought it was a blessing in disguise because, like I said earlier about the Seahawks pass defense, if you're going to be in obvious passing situations, that's where the Seahawks defense, that's their wheelhouse. And in a game like this, you want to try to avoid situations where the Seahawks pass defense would make plays and hurt you. So I was fine with them sitting on the ball to end the first half because they were getting the third quarter kickoff. They were up 10-3. Looking back now, in retrospect, it was a pivotal penalty call. It wasn't one of those no harm, no foul things. Because if you have the ball at the 38, they had about 28 seconds. They had all three of their timeouts. They did a great job managing timeouts, by the way, during this game. Unlike the Green Bay game, where Kaepernick was burning timeouts left and right. But they only needed about 30 yards to get into Phil Dawson's range. 30 yards from the 38 would have set up a 50-yard field goal. And when you're losing by six, you lose the game by six, it makes the end game completely different if you only need a field goal to tie on that final drive as opposed to needing a touchdown to win. You don't need a touchdown on the final drive if you can somehow get points at the end of the first half. So in retrospect, it was a crucial call. I think it was a crucial call. And it could have cost him 3 points. Could have, like I said. But then again, you never know. Kaepernick may have thrown an out, square out, like people do. You know, go to the sideline, 10 yards up, go to the sideline, throws a pick six. Could have changed the game completely. It's hard to say. I just think that you can't say that penalty was no harm, no foul. But back to Russell Wilson and his butterflies. You could tell, at least in the first half, he settled down because he, like Kaepernick, is a very... very poised, very mature kid. You could tell, though, in the first half, he was playing the biggest game of his life. Kaepernick wasn't playing the biggest game of his career at that point because he was in the Super Bowl last year. And Kaepernick had a really solid first half. Wilson, like the Seahawks offense, settled down. They adjusted in the second half. And I don't know if it was just me or not, but I think the Niners defense looked tired in the second half. They were missing a lot more tackles. They weren't arm tackling nearly as much. They were going for strips more than they were going for tackles. Like on the Marshawn Lynch touchdown, for example, he broke a couple of tackles. Guys are out of position. And Tremaine Brock, 26, if you could look at the highlight of it, like around the 5-yard line, instead of trying to wrap, he had Lynch from behind, and instead of trying to wrap him up, he just punched the ball a couple of times. And otherwise, Lynch scored. But you got to make tackles. At this level, you got to push him out of bounds. You can't let him in the end zone because your run defense has been stout pretty much the whole game, with the exception of a couple of like 7 or 8 yard runs and that 40 yard touchdown by Lynch. They even had a goal line stand later on in the game. So, I mean, you tackle him inside the 5, but that's not a gimme for the Niners defense. But they look tired. I think that's because they couldn't establish the run. They had short drives in the second half. Their longest second half drive was 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And the Seahawks didn't have a long drive either. Their longest drive was like 4 minutes, but the point was that the defense didn't have a lot of time to rest. And especially when the Seahawks started running the ball, you could tell that it was wearing them down a little bit. They weren't getting to Russell Wilson as much. He didn't have to run around nearly as much. Like in the first half, he got just beat up in the first half. He got chased around in the first half. People are making Fran Tarkenton comparisons to Russell Wilson in the first half, which is great because Fran Tarkenton was my idol growing up, but that's not the kind of game you really want to play. You're kind of getting lucky. You're kind of playing with fire. He had that one scramble where he was about 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage that turned into an intentional grounding penalty. And this should tell you how bad the refereeing was against the 49ers yesterday. Not that's an excuse, but it took about 10 whole seconds of the whole 49ers bench yelling at the referees for them to finally call a flag on that intentional grounding against Russell Wilson. But you can't be running around back there. I mean, it's one thing if you're leaving the pocket to gain yards like Kaepernick was. Russell Wilson was setting up the pass, but he got lucky a couple times. Let's just say that. The Seahawks' run defense was really the key in the second half for the Seahawks stopping the Niners, because it was 10-3 at the half. Niners only got the one touchdown in the second half, and that was on that great throw from Kaepernick. The 12th man wasn't a factor in the game. Everyone talks about the cleansing that the Seahawks were trying to do. They were trying to keep 49er fans out. There weren't that many in the stands. I couldn't tell that many were in the stands. But Pam Oliver made a reference on the sideline report. She was talking about that the crowd really hadn't hit its peak yet. She was waiting for that. She was waiting for that seismic activity that they were talking about, that the Seahawks fans in their genetically engineered noise-making stadium can cause earthquakes simply by Marshawn Lynch busting off a big run or something. It never happened. I think the decibel meter only got up to like 106 or something, which for Seahawks fans is pretty tame, because they've shown the decibel meter in the 130s. And it's just odd to me because it's the biggest game of the year. And like I said, You're keeping the other fans out. You're making sure it's all your fans. I don't know why the crowd wasn't a factor, but it wasn't. There was only like one or two false start penalties on the Niners. The crowd really wasn't a factor. And the refereeing, like I said, Seahawks fans, I used to live in Seattle, and even now they still complain about Super Bowl 40. The Super Bowl they were in where they lost to Pittsburgh, and they got some really bad calls against them, some really ridiculous calls against them in the Super Bowl. But after yesterday, I think Seahawks fans really don't have a reason to complain anymore, because yesterday was like a makeup call from the league for Super Bowl 40. The Seahawks got every major call during the game their way. I don't think it was a factor in that they won, but it didn't hurt them. Let's just say I counted four major situations that helped the Seahawks out. There was the Bowman non-fumble recovery. And this has always been a pet peeve of mine about the scrum for the fumble. There's got to be a way to establish who has the ball first, and then when an opposing player touches them, they're down by contact. So just because there's all this fighting and grabbing of certain areas and clawing and spitting and all the things they do in the pile, Bowman clearly had the ball. He was clearly down, touched by a Seahawk player. He's down by contact. And they didn't give the Niners the ball. The Seahawks kept the ball, and they even said it wasn't a reviewable play. If the average person at home or in the Buffalo Wild Wings can see clearly on a giant high-definition screen that player X has the ball in clear possession, is down on the ground and touched by another team's player, that it's their ball. It worked out well for the Niners, actually. A little bit of luck on their part, because Marshawn Lynch fumbled the fourth down carry, and then the ball got bounced back to the 15, so they got the ball at the 15 as opposed to getting it at the 1. So it worked out for them, but not because of the referees. That was just dumb luck. They did have a drive that they could have continued, though. It was the roughing the kicker that wasn't called. They called running into the kicker instead of roughing the kicker. Mike Pereira, they talked to him during the Fox broadcast yesterday, made a great point about the difference between running into and roughing the kicker. The running into is the 5 yard, the roughing is the 15. It depends on which leg that the player hits on the kicker. If they hit the kicking leg, which is usually extended in the air, that's what they're going to call the running into the kicker. But the Niners punter, he got hit in the plant leg. He had a pretty nasty looking sprained ankle there at some point. It's a miracle he even came back in the game. Unfortunately, they needed him later on during the game. Hopefully they wouldn't have needed the punter again. But yeah, he had a nasty looking sprained ankle. One of two nasty looking leg injuries for the 49ers. Wish they'd stop showing those injuries. There was the Dante Whitner personal foul, which was on a first down, but it gave the Seahawks 15 yards. And people are saying it was a bad call because it was a shoulder-to-shoulder hit, which is true. It wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit. He didn't hit the helmet at all. The problem with the hit, the reason why it was called a penalty, is because he launched himself like a projectile at the receiver. He wasn't getting called for helmet to helmet. He was getting called for defenseless receiver, for unnecessary roughness. Because when you send yourself as a missile towards another player, you're going to get, especially in this NFL, I don't know why people don't coach this out of the players. It's kind of like with pass interference. You know, they say he wasn't looking for the ball, he wasn't playing the ball. All you got to do is teach the defensive backs to just turn your head and look for the ball. Coach this out of the players. Coach the fact that launching yourself like a missile at other people to impersonate playing defense, it doesn't work anymore. It's going to catch a flag regardless. The Carlos Rogers shove I mentioned earlier, people were saying at the time that it was a stupid, it was a ridiculous call. It was totally ridiculous. And it could have cost the 49ers 3 points. It could have. But That's neither here nor there. We'll never know. Like I said earlier, the Seahawks, you don't want to be in passing situations. They succeeded in the second half because of passing situations. Richard Sherman in particular. And Richard Sherman capped off a totally ridiculous post game yesterday. He wasn't the only one. People are bashing on Richard Sherman. I was bashing on Richard Sherman at first. I've had time to think about it. Unlike Richard Sherman when he had time to think about it, I have actually something different to say about Richard Sherman, and I'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes on CBS Sports Radio.
96.1 and 1270.
Sherman made a good play. I mean, that's probably the only play he made the whole game. I mean, if you cut up the film and look at it, he's a TV guy. I'm not a TV guy. I play ball. He make one play and you talk.
Michael Crabtree there after the game. Not really sour grapes. Richard Sherman didn't do that much before the end of the game, his big play at the end of the game. Boomer Esiason bashing. No offense to Norman Esiason. Good guy, great quarterback. Has a decent radio show in New York City and on the network. But it's easy to say things like, oh, that's just terrible. What he said is just awful. I'll admit, I was a little disgusted at first. I tweeted, because I tweet, no offense, Panama, but I tweet, that way to take the high road on the way to the Super Bowl. And I'm rooting for the Broncos, not because of that, for other reasons. People that know me know the other reasons. But the more I've had to think about it, Richard Sherman is a genius, an absolute genius. He went to Stanford. He's a smart guy. He's actually a likable guy. He's got a foundation in Seattle. He's not one of these guys you hear about getting arrested. He's not a thug. I mean, he was doing that thing where he acted like a thug. You know, we had the this.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Poor Aaron Andrews. I feel so sorry for Aaron Andrews having to listen to that. But at first, you think Richard Sherman's being one of those guys. It's easy to say in public, you know, that, oh, I'd never, you know, I don't approve of that. Secretly, you kind of like, you know, at least he didn't just give some boring milquetoast interview, you know, where he thanked God. Not that there's anything wrong with thanking God, but he wasn't humble. I mean, some of these guys are really boring. I'm not going to say Russell Wilson's boring, but that's just not Russell Wilson's thing, I guess. But Richard Sherman would make a great broadcaster. I would know, because I've done broadcasting for a long time, and Richard Sherman has the mouth for it. I would know. Richard Sherman is as shameless as any radio person I've ever met in my life. That's a compliment, actually, to say that. He's simply trying to make sure people talk about the Seahawks in Super Bowl 48. And you're probably thinking, why would Richard Sherman have to do this? Why would he have to make a WWE-type heel turn to get people to talk about the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl? The only thing missing, frankly, was the Ric Flair woo at the end. Woo! You know, or the crotch chop, you know, the DX thing. If you don't follow wrestling, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. But it's important to remember the last time the Seahawks were in the Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl 40. They played Pittsburgh and Detroit. Remember I talked earlier about that they got hosed by the refs and they can't complain about all the calls they got today. But they got hosed before the game, too, in Super Bowl 40. Super Bowl extra large. As that joke never gets old. Calling it because it's XL. I can't wait for XXL. It's extra large. Extra large. 2XL. I can't think of the Roman numeral for that. But they played the Steelers. It was the 2005 season. It was February 2006. They played them in Detroit. The entire week leading up to the Super Bowl at Ford Field was about Jerome Bettis, because Jerome Bettis was retiring after the game. And did you know that Jerome Bettis was from Detroit? Did you know that? If you don't know that, you didn't watch 1 second of the Super Bowl pregame, because it's still a running joke with some people. Did you? Hey, you know Jerome Bettis is from Detroit? Really? Whenever I go to Detroit, I know people in Detroit. That's the first thing I think of is, hey, Jerome Bettis is from there. The Seahawks had a pretty good running back of their own in 2005. Sean Alexander, league MVP. He set the record for touchdowns in a season that year. But did you know Jerome Bettis was from Detroit? Sean Alexander, he wasn't even there almost. Richard Sherman going all Monday Night Raw on us yesterday. That's just him trying to make sure that the Seahawks get some publicity this year. And it's possible that they might not even this year. Because I have ranked right here the Super Bowl 48 talking point rankings. Because I work in the media, and trust me, the media is a dead horse industry that will never go out of business. There's always a dead horse that needs to get beaten. And the media proudly serves up a fresh product. The dead horse industry will never go out of style, never go out of business. These, in order of how I think they're going to be talked about, starting with what I think is going to be most talked about, are the Super Bowl 48 talking point rankings. Tell me when you notice something that is Seattle or Seahawk related. Leading off the talking point rankings is Omaha. Peyton Manning, 31 Omahas yesterday, which thanks to business leaders in Omaha making a charitable donation for every time he gave their city a free plug, raised almost $25,000 for charity by using the word Omaha. I'm kind of surprised Tom Brady didn't have a better game, because he was using Omaha as an audible years before Peyton Manning. I don't know why they have the mics so close to the field that you can catch every freaking audible that Peyton Manning does. Because it really is ruining my enjoyment of football, to be honest. And in true pop culture fashion, everybody's making a big deal about Omaha. Have you ever been to Omaha? I've been to Omaha. I'm not going to say anything negative about Omaha. I'm just going to say that it's a nice place. It has no professional sports teams. Well, major league pro sports teams. It's got one really tall building. It's on a river. They've got riverboat casinos on the Missouri River. I think it's the Missouri River. But Omaha's all right. I don't think they deserve this much publicity. Omaha, I don't know if you noticed this or not. They actually paid somebody to, CBS actually paid somebody to count the number of times he said Omaha. They didn't, however, count the number of times he said Marshall. Because that's another thing that he used yesterday. He mixed it up yesterday. It wasn't an Omaha Palooza yesterday. They're going to talk all this week and all of next week about all the stuff Peyton Manning does at the line of scrimmage. They're not going to talk about how Peyton Manning has obsessive compulsive disorder and how he's a functional human being with OCD. Because mental illness is nothing to joke about. It's a serious thing, and Peyton Manning should be an inspiration to all of us. I have mental illness. I work in radio. And I'm paranoid and depressed. I'm a Vikings fan. I have every reason to be depressed. But they're not going to talk about Peyton Manning's OCD. The fact that he has to do certain things all the time. He's got to have OCD. No offense to Peyton. He's a prodigy. But prodigies aren't always right in the head. No offense to Peyton or any other prodigies out there, by the way. He said Marshall a lot. There was one play, it was a draw play, actually. If you notice with Peyton Manning, the more he does something at the line of scrimmage for the play, the more likely it is going to be a draw play. It's almost never a passing play. Most of what he says actually doesn't mean anything. He doesn't use Omaha as an audible like Tom Brady uses it as an actual audible. Peyton Manning uses Omaha. They're trying to figure out what Omaha means. If you watch a lot of college football, and of course, Reno has University of Nevada. In college, the quarterbacks at least have the courtesy of just clapping their hand once when they're ready for the snap. That's what Peyton Manning uses the word Omaha for. Because if you notice, he says Omaha, he says Hut, ball. It can't be an audible, or it probably could be. I mean, I'm not a former professional quarterback or anything. One play, though, he had Marshall, he said Montana, he said Fat Man, and Omaha on the same play. The only thing missing was Better Ingredients, Better Pizza, Papa John's. Which, that'd be great if he could mix that in to the audible. But that's the first talking point. Peyton Manning, all the stuff he says at the line of scrimmage. This is stuff that's going to be Ron Burgundy level annoying by the time the game comes around. Second on the Super Bowl 48 talking point rankings, Peyton Manning playing in Eli Manning Stadium. Which isn't the first time that this has happened where a Manning has played in the Brothers Stadium. Eli won a Super Bowl at Lucas Oil Field when Peyton was a Colt, and now Peyton can reciprocate. So, of course, we got to get all the Mannings involved. And I'm a big fan of the Manning family, but come on. Third on the rankings, the cold weather. Did you know Jerome Bettis is from Detroit? And did you know that this is the first time they're going to intentionally play a Super Bowl outside in cold weather on purpose? Did you know that? It's going to be a cold weather game. It's going to be in the 30s. It might snow. Oh my God. Roger Goodell's going to sit outside. He's not going to sit in the press box or in the owner's box or in a luxury suite. He's going to sit with the peons and freeze his butt off. Is he going to have a flask of whiskey to keep him warm also? Like most of the people in MetLife Stadium. The NFL is really weird because when they held the Super Bowl in Dallas, they called it North Texas. And then they hold the Super Bowl in Miami and they call it South Florida. They hold the Super Bowl, the stadium's in New Jersey, but they say it's the first New York City Super Bowl. It's weird how they do that. New Jersey's not getting any. New Jersey's getting less credit and publicity than the Seahawks. That should tell you something. Fourth on the talking point rankings is pot. Because it's the Smoke Bowl. You have Colorado and Washington, the two states that have legalized marijuana. And you just know that even though it has nothing to do with the fact that both the teams are in it, you just know this is going to turn into some marijuana reform kind of thing to where, hey, look how happy the people there are. States' rights, it's harmless. Whether you think it's harmless or not, it's going to turn into it. People are going to talk about it. Ron Burgundy level annoying. Fifth on the talking point rankings, Peyton Manning retiring because they're talking about he might retire after the game, like John Elway, after he won two Super Bowls. He went out on top. Is Peyton Manning going to go out on top? I told you what I thought about Tom Brady, that I think he's on his way out, that the Patriots need to prepare already for the fact that Tom Brady, he doesn't need to enhance his legacy anymore. Peyton Manning doesn't need to enhance his legacy anymore, win or lose. He's got the fused vertebrae. Peyton Manning doesn't need football anymore. He does it because he loves it, but Peyton Manning is one of those people that, it's kind of like when you're at a crappy job. I'm not saying he has a crappy job. It's kind of like you're at a crappy job and you're like, you think in the back of your head, this may be the last day I work here. I may get fed up and quit. Peyton Manning, he won't get fed up and quit, but he might want to quit on top. They're going to talk about that. John Elway's going to get talked about a lot, too. We should add him to the power rankings after Peyton Manning retiring. Hang on, where's the pen here? John Elway. Actually, it's a good thing for John that the 49ers didn't win, because all they talk about then is, hey, he gets to get revenge on the 49ers for that 55-10 game. So it's probably better it's the Seahawks in the Smoke Bowl. So after John Elway, so after Omaha, after Peyton playing in Eli Stadium, after the cold weather Super Bowl, after Pot, after Peyton Manning retiring, after John Elway being involved, his return to glory, apparently, the 12th man. Because we have to, when you talk about the Seattle Seahawks, you have to talk about the 12th man. Even though it's a Texas A&M thing that the Seahawks pay Texas A&M to use. Please don't forget that whenever you talk about the 12th man. Texas A&M owns the trademark to 12th man. The Seahawks pay. Every time you hear the words 12th man, that means money is being transferred to College Station, Texas, so they can buy a new offensive lineman. Every time you see somebody that has one of those 12-man jerseys, $5 of that goes to buy Johnny Manziel a keg of a Michelob. But they're going to talk about the 12th man a lot. They're going to wonder, it's a shame that the 12th man can't be here in New Jersey. Or it's a New York Super Bowl. In New York City, I'm sorry. They will, however, during the game, I guarantee you, during the game, I guarantee they will have constant monitoring of Seahawk fans at CenturyLink Field. That place will be pretty full for the Super Bowl. They'll be watching on a jumbo. At least I would do that if I were the Seahawks. And you just know that every time the Seahawks do something good, they're going to cut back to Seattle, take a look at the good old 12th man at CenturyLink Field to get their take on the... they're cheering, so the Seahawks must be doing some good. And then after the 12th man, I think this is... Hang on, one, two... I think seventh on the power rankings is Richard Sherman and the great Seattle defense and the heel turn. Which is what it was. It was a straight-up WWE heel turn by Richard Sherman, which he needs to do. We're talking about him still. And for those people that are defending Richard Sherman by saying the Aaron Andrews interview was just an emotional, he's an emotional guy, it's heat-of-the-moment thing, there's no on-off switch, you know, he can't go from football mode to functional human mode that fast. I beg to differ. I'm still giving Richard Sherman credit. Media savvy genius, in my opinion. But this is Richard Sherman right after the game, terrorizing Aaron Andrews.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
I just love the look Aaron Andrews has when Richard Sherman's going off all Hulk Hogan. What you going to do, brother? When Richard Sherman and the tip pass interception comes looking for you. But then he had time to compose himself, and then he talked to Ed Warder from ESPN on the sideline a little bit later, right? And this is him a little bit after he's composed himself from football mode. This is him with Ed Warder later on the sideline.
Well, I told y'all Crabtree was mediocre at best, so I would never let him catch a game winner on me. This is a joke, right?
You're described as the best defender of the fade route in football. How did you set that up?
Like I said before the game, if our team knew they were going to try me on a fade for the game, we'd be wearing our hats early.
All right, but you could say, all right, he's only being an a-hole because he's still on the sideline. He's still not out of football mode yet, you know? But let's get him out of the sideline. Let's get him showered. Let's let him breathe. All right, press conference time. Surely we're going to have a different Richard Sherman than we did on the sideline.
I was making sure everybody knew that Crabtree was a mediocre receiver. Mediocre. And when you try the best corner in the game with a mediocre receiver, that's what happens. Me and Earl had a very heated discussion earlier in the week. He thought Crabtree was a top 15 receiver. I said he wouldn't break the top 20 in his team. If they had a choice in the top 10 to draft any receiver like a fantasy draft of the whole NFL, they wouldn't pick Crabtree.
Yeah, okay. The only thing missing was a steel chair to the head of Michael Crabtree, who did have this to say.
Sherman made a good play. I mean, that's probably the only play he made the whole game. I mean, if you cut up the film and look at it, he's a TV guy. I'm not a TV guy. I play ball. He make one play and you talk.
Just unbelievable. But we're still talking about Richard Sherman. We're not talking about Peyton Manning. Well, we're talking about both. But the fact is we're talking about both, which is good, right? I just want to see what happens with Richard Sherman, media savvy genius, from here on out. He's got 2 weeks. Is he going to backtrack at all on Crabtree? Is he going to double down on it? Is he going to talk crap about Demaryius Thomas? God, I hope he doesn't talk crap about Demaryius Thomas. Because Demaryius Thomas will eat him for lunch if he does that. He might talk crap about Eric Decker, though, because he's on a reality TV show. He's got a country music star for a wife. He'll probably talk trash about Eric Decker. We'll talk about the Broncos. I mentioned a little bit about Tom Brady. Is Tom Brady done? We talked about Peyton Manning might retire. What about Tom Brady? Could this be the end for the Patriots as we know it? That's coming up next on CBS Sports Radio.
Northern Nevada's new home for sports. 96.1 and 1270.
CBS Sports Radio.
It was a 15-round fight. I mean, it was a great fight by our guys. But congratulations to the Seahawks. They go into the Super Bowl.
Devastating.
You can be a man can be destroyed, but he can't be defeated.
Is that a quote?
We're not devastating. Congratulations to the Seahawks.
Had to get that Jim Harbaugh in there. He was a little shell shocked, terrorizing Pam Oliver yesterday. It was chaos in Seattle. I spent too much time talking about Seattle, though. CBS Sports Radio here in Reno, 96.1, 1270. Notch, Sports Buffet, how you doing? Broncos covered the 5 yesterday, which is what I had them at on my ticket. It dropped to 4.5 over the weekend, probably due to some New England money coming in. But the over-under, not so good if you bought the hype. The sports books are constantly jacking up the over-under on the Broncos. It's like they're getting at least a field goal more than they should in some of these games. You got to give Denver a lot of credit, though, in the playoffs. They've only scored 50 points total in the playoffs. They scored 600 points in the regular season. They've scored 50 points in 2 playoff games. But their defense has performed well. It's always been the knock on teams that are high-powered teams in the playoffs that falter. They're too reliant on scoring points. And if they can't score 35, 40, then they don't know what to do. But the Broncos have played well. We're going to hear so much about the Broncos, though. I got to talk about the Patriots real quick. Got about 5 more minutes left. Thanks for putting up with me today. But Tom Brady, I think the Patriots, as they currently are, the Patriots you know and love or the Patriots you know and hate, I think that team is done. I think yesterday is Tom Brady's Jacksonville moment. Well, what I mean by that is, you remember the Jacksonville-Miami game where the Jaguars beat the Dolphins 62-7 and Dan Marino and Jimmy Johnson both decided to retire after that game? This could be, at least when I got to 23-3, I thought this was going to be that game for Tom Brady. That this is going to be the game where he's like, you know what, I got a supermodel wife. You know, I don't need this. But Tom Brady has clearly, whatever his motivation is inside his own head, he's clearly lost some of his game. You can't blame the receivers, though, because there were guys that were open yesterday, and the old Tom Brady hits these guys. He needed to hit Julian Edelman with that pass early in the game when Edelman got behind his man. He might not have gotten a touchdown, but he would have gotten inside the 10. When you're playing in Denver against a team that scored 600 points in the regular season, you can't bring a knife fight, can't bring a knife to a gunfight, and the Patriots brought a little tiny Swiss Army knife to a gunfight yesterday. The old Tom Brady hits Austin Collie down the sideline when he's got a step on his man. He didn't have any mobility in the pocket. I mean, he'd stand there like a statue. He'd get hit, knocked down. He did have a one running touchdown. That was more of a desperation thing than anything else. You got to make plays in a game like this to beat the Broncos. San Diego tried a ball control offense the week before in the divisional round, and they only got back in the game when they opened it up. Pats were trying to help everybody with the over. Got a little garbage time against a soft Denver zone. But Brady's hurt, too. Ligament damage in his wrist since Halloween. He's 36. He's got the rings. He's got the legacy. After they scored a little bit, the pride thing, the less I thought about the Jacksonville game and the more I thought about Joe Montana as a Chief when he went to Buffalo in 91, he lost in the AFC Championship game. But you can tell this is Montana. He was on his last legs, kind of like Brady's on his last legs. Montana, none to prove anymore, just like Brady. Montana got a concussion in that AFC Championship game, like Brady had a busted wrist. Might have to have surgery on that wrist. This could be it for Tom Brady. He might keep playing, but the Tom Brady we know is gone. New England, it wouldn't surprise me. If I were the Patriots, I look at a deep quarterback draft. A.J. McCarron, Zach Mettenberger, maybe Aaron Murray at Georgia. They need receivers, too. The Patriots need to overhaul the offense. You can't totally blame Tom Brady because of the skill players he was surrounded by. Well, like I said, he had open receivers. You can't blame you can't say he's got subpar receivers when they're getting open past guys. You know, it'd be a great pickup for the Patriots on day 2 of the draft. Brandon Wimberly, Wolfpack receiver. He's got the mental toughness. He's got the size. He's got the hands. I mean, you go to Mackey Stadium, you watch him play, and you could tell he was a Sunday player. You could tell he was going to be drafted at some point. He's probably a day two guy, maybe a third round guy. He'd be a good pickup for any team, actually. The Jets, I know, need... Oh, that's the wrong button. I'm sorry about that. But I knew it was going to mess up at some point. But Wimberly, he's probably going to get picked by an AFC East team. Probably going to get picked by the Jets or the Dolphins or the Patriots. He'd be great for the Patriots. He reminds me about a lot of Vincent Jackson. He's shorter than Vincent, but he's that type of player. He's not a burner, but he's a downfield threat. Brandon Wimberly is someone that can be a downfield threat. Hopefully we see him drafted by a team that that will use him. Brandon Wimberly's a good player. Patriots, they got to move on. Turn the page, Patriots. I'm going to turn the page. Notch, I'm out of here. I'll talk to you at noon with Panama, CBS Sports Radio.